the grade cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible, at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Great Cricketer Podcast on the Diamantina Podcast Network. Adam Zampa and Jason Sanger are on the show, but before then, we need to talk about the second and third ODI versus India. I know we've already forgotten about those, but we must touch on them because many things happened. Obviously, the Aussie Test squad against Sri Lanka has been announced. Plenty of ins and outs there. Sri Lanka are struggling. Those WBBL finals, my goodness me, were unbelievable. Mm. Talking about that, also some of the men's Big Bash, which the biggest takeaway is that the lights went out at the Gabba. That before answering your questions using the hashtag AskTGC. Ian Higgins here with Sam Perry and Dave Edwards. Boys, happy new year. Have we already forgotten about the ODIs?
Oh, absolutely. You started saying we're going to talk about the ODIs, I was like, what happened? I really forget what happened. Yeah. But yeah, look, you know, it was good, wasn't it? Like, India won. They deserve to win.
Yeah.
Australia kind of made a slight fist of it in Adelaide via a Sean Marsh ton.
Yeah.
But really, the class won out. And while everyone lost it on Twitter about how slow MS Dhoni was going, he still just controlled it, and he's about 85 years old, and it was really easy for him.
Yeah.
I just love the way that Dhoni goes about it. He's not rushed. Mm. Like, we're all just so rushed in our modern lives. It's like when the fucking... the garbage bin comes and you think about putting it out the day before, but you'll just wait till it's there two doors down and you fucking run outside with your undies trying to get it in. You know, he doesn't want, he just waits until the garbage man is right outside his house, goes in, pops it in, done.
Fitting analogy.
Why fuck around?
I like that. So Dhoni is 37, same age as Roger Federer, just a couple of champions just rolling around.
Yeah. Champed him.
Champed him. And the chat was in India. Like before this test, before this ODI series, is that like, would you take Dhoni to the World Cup? Which I find incredible. I mean, it probably just shows how much depth they have. Mm. I think Pant is the backup, who's obviously done wonderfully well in the test series as well. Runs, attacking, exciting batsman, wicket keeps okay as well. But like Dhoni, like how could you not have that experience in like the middle order?
I think the argument is that like while it's amazing to watch how well he times a chase, like he does put a lot of pressure on the batsmen around him to do the job. Perhaps beating Australia at the moment is easy compared to who they might come up against if they want to win the World Cup. So, you know, Kohli has to do a lot more than the other guys. Kartik, I think, is the other guy as well who had to do a little bit as well and maybe didn't get the praise that Dhoni gets because, like, you know, your great analogy, Dave, was spot on. Like, it reminds me of, like, trying to finish an essay at uni or something and just ignoring it. And just going, it's not due. I don't know how this is going to get done. Is it going to write itself? Yeah. He's like that with an ODI, except that like when he needs to, he just hits a six.
Yeah.
When it comes to essays, loses 10%.
Yeah, exactly. Loses 10%, but still gets a good mark. Yeah.
He still strikes me as a guy who gets like, I said this last week, just like, I'll hit a six now. I need to hit one now. I hit one.
Yeah.
And just bombs it. I mean, I take your point as well, being this Australian side. It is a second string attack.
Yeah.
You know, Joe Richardson's done very well, but like we are missing Stark, former number one ODI bowler in the world. Mm, Cummins isn't playing. Is Hazelwood? Yeah, Hazelwood's probably there or thereabouts there as well. So it's probably, it's probably a bit of a second string attack, but still.
Yeah. So I think. It's an interesting one. I think all like the data guys are like, Dhoni flatters to deceive a little bit, and it's a bit more about the cult of Dhoni. He's kind of got carte blanche in India to do what he wants now. It's like the great elder statesman, but still, it's great to watch.
But mate, how good is it going to be getting around Dhoni at the World Cup?
That's a good point.
Intangibles that he provides for young Indian cricketers coming through, and just to be around him, just to be around him and be surrounded by him, I think will be invaluable.
Which, as we know, is very important in the Australian game, being able to get around people generally. Yeah. Be up and about.
The ability to be surrounded by other players and men is really important in cricket.
I love that. I love that so much because it's like India clearly the best team in the world at the moment, but like you never hear like Ravi Shastri being like, oh, well, Dhoni's good around the group.
Yeah, that's right.
He's one of the best players in the world, so we will pick him.
Yeah.
So India have beaten us in the T20s. They beat us in the Test series. They beat us in the ODIs.
Mm-hmm. What are you saying?
Let me put it to you that we were very unlucky in the entire series. Let me put it to you that... Kohli wasn't at his all-time best this series, any of these series. Mm. You know, he got 100 in the second ODI.
Mm. Right.
Batted very well. Yeah, he got hundreds in the test series, batted okay in the T20s. Mm. He wasn't amazing in any at any point, and yet Australia really weren't close in any of these series.
It's a sizzling hot take from you.
Yeah, I'm absolutely on
Stephen
A.
Smith
here. Yeah.
I mean, like, so what I'm saying is, LeBron's overrated. What I'm saying is,
but is he clutch?
Yeah. I mean, the beginning of the series, everyone was like, well, I mean, if we get Coley out, we might be a chance. But like, I mean, Coley was, you know, he was okay in all three series, but like, we've just been dicked three times.
Yeah. It's a funny verb, isn't it, to be dicked? But, well, I mean, what can you say? I think we've kind of trampled over this ground, haven't we? But we didn't have Smith and Warner.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So nothing counts. Yeah, the caveat, the all-time caveat. I mean, at least the ODI stuff kind of gave way to some changes in the test side. Like, there were a few people who didn't quite perform, but one guy who did was Jai Richardson. So the Malcolm in the middle, all grown up, now finds himself in the... In the test side, I think I welcome it. I welcome his selection into the side. I think a lot of people are like, yeah, but what about Chris Tremaine and Scott Boland, who've taken more wickets this year in the Shield? Like, Jai Richardson's taken a lot of wickets too. He's taken like 29 wickets at 19. Mm. And, you know, he bowls 140s. Mm. So
the ever-present seduction of pace over anything else, we will always surrender to that as a nation. I mean, we've got England to look forward to where, you know, traditionally it's a place for medium pace seamers and swingers who can do a bit with the ball, and we have those in Australia.
Yeah,
but you know, Jai Richardson is fast, and we're excited by pace. Raw pace excites us as Australians.
That's a good point. The selections as a whole are interesting. I'm totally fine with Jai Richardson getting a Guernsey. By the way,
fine. Don't get me wrong.
Of all the bowlers, you know, going around in the state system, he's as good as, you know, I think that the bowling's fine anyway. I mean, like, really, unless someone's injured, i.e. Josh Hazlewood, like, the replacement is, I don't know, it seems fine to me. But, like, in the ODIs, Sean Marsh, probably the standout batsman.
Yeah.
He will go to the World Cup. Like, he'd have to do something remarkably wrong to not get picked for the World Cup. Yeah. And this kind of all fits in a little bit to the test selection for the Ashes, because this Sri Lanka series is starting on Thursday at the Gabba there. Seems just the most, like, just non-consequential. Just
it's
like,
it's just contractual obligations. We have to do it. We don't want to do it. No one wants to do it. Sri Lanka doesn't want to be there. We don't want to be there.
Yeah.
But, you know, we book the grounds. We've got to go.
But we need this, though, don't we? Like, I mean, how hungry is the Australian public for hundreds and just bulk gluttony of wickets and runs?
Are you still hungry? I mean, it's a long summer.
Yeah.
We haven't had 100.
Mm. Just watch us, though. I mean, I take your point, like, that it's all very much an afterthought, this series. And, you know, we're already taking great arrogance into it, thinking we're going to knock Sri Lanka over when...
We are going to.
We've taken no learnings from this India series.
Absolutely. Or just generally.
History.
I am 100% fine with, like, the ultra arrogance of me right now.
Yeah.
Just being like, all Sri Lanka
You're so
are,
bullied. Yeah, why are you your shirt off?
Sri Lanka are awful. I'm about to sing the team song. Like, because they are, like, there's probably teams in, like, the conference of international teams who could beat Sri Lanka at the moment. They're missing Angelo Matthews. Pradeep is out with a hamstring, as you've noted in the agenda here.
and he wasn't going to be picked anyway.
I'm a big Pradeep fan, as you know.
What do you like about him?
Just the way he goes about it. He's good for the group, Good to be around the group. So, like, they're really weak. They are awfully weak. And, like, I think runs... In this series, someone could score 150 and be like, yeah, it's Sri Lanka though, isn't it? That was flat wickets.
I don't know. I reckon we're at the point where it will be worth like 1.5 times centuries. Oh, we just want...
All right, runs.
We want hundreds. It'll be clipped up by Seven and Fox. You know, there'll be inspiring music behind it. All sorts of narratives will then be able to like spawn and grow between now and the Ashes in August. I mean, I think like if you're Burns, Renshaw... Patterson, who we'll talk about, and Pekowski, like you would just be absolutely licking your lips that you were not picked against India, and now you come in against Sri Lanka, weren't you? Because like the recency bias is going to be incredible.
I mean, I think this is like Sean Marsh's biggest failure, and that like he just had to surely just do enough to just keep the Wolves at bay for a little bit to get into the Sri Lanka series where he would because I can already see what's going to happen. He's going to go back to Shield, score 700 runs in the last four Shield games.
Yeah. Look and good then, while he's at it.
Look amazing, you know.
Spectacular.
And also his technique will be good as well. And then it'll just be like, well, we've got the leading run scorer in the Shield who's now scored 1,000 runs in a Shield season. Do we take him to the Ashes? Mm. And it's like, well, do you go back to that? But then it's just like, oh, yeah, but Patterson got a 70 at the Gabba. Yeah, it was against Sri Lanka. You know, all these questions are going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing we can do about it that's going to happen. Yeah. So let's just prepare ourselves for that.
Well, it's kind of like this series as a whole. It's just like, well, let's just get through it. Do you think the country is interested in this? Because like, so the what Cricket Australia did when the lights went out at the Gabba the other night, there was probably 15,000-ish people at the Gabba that night. So the lights went out at the Gabba, and then the CA were like, well, you can get a free day at the cricket, any day at the cricket, to the test match.
Mm.
So CA are expecting so few people at this test match that they're just like, oh, 15,000 people want to come on any of these days. Oh, yeah. Just bring them along. Yeah, no dramas.
I'd love to know if anyone's actually arced up about that. No, I want my money back, or I want to go and watch another BBL game.
Yeah.
Like, because they'd be indignant as a consumer, and rightfully so, to be able to request that from CA. I'd love to know the numbers.
Yeah, I don't think the Big Bash fans and the Test Match fans are the same
people. Completely demographic.
I went to my first Big Bash game the other day, by the way. We're getting massively off track here, but that would be my last Big Bash game for a while.
What were your impressions?
It's just
not a good match day experience.
It's fucking in your face. Oh. Like, you can't enjoy the cricket because, like, there's like a dot ball and then just like this roaring track of like Sher from like the 80s or the 90s or, you know, just like there's like in your face in between balls. There's just too much going on.
Well, you're 80. Attention deficit disorder sufferees.
Yeah.
And everywhere you go. I mean, I went to one as well and there's just pop-ups everywhere. It's like pop-up ads everywhere. There's music blaring, people moving, colours. It's sensory overload.
I found it hard to have a conversation with my mates. And just like the PA system was blaring so much. I sound like an 80-year-old angry man.
But you don't go to the BBL to have a conversation with your mates.
Yeah.
No. No, you don't. That's what I learned.
You went in eyes wide open. Like, you're aware that it's not made for you.
Yeah, I did.
Do you know what I mean?
I did.
You went out of curiosity.
I was
curious. Why did you go?
Like,
can you run me through the actual thought processes? Like, oh, I might head out to the BBL this evening.
What
to
night
Sydney
was it
Sixers
as well? Like, it was a Wednesday night.
Oh, yeah.
It's a Wednesday night.
Yeah. You go to the Eastern afterwards?
It's a Wednesday night. I did go East afterwards, but not to the Eastern. What happened was Ed Cowan texted me, said, do you want to go? And I go, okay.
I'll do anything for you.
Cowan wants to go.
Yeah, so
my famous friend. I'll do anything for you.
Yeah, I'll do anything for you. So that's what happened. And I went.
Cowan just called on you and you're like, yeah, no worries.
Yeah, I was already there. I was at the SCG. I wore my media pass.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck me. So you really, true that's fan experience.
That's a joke, by the way.
You used your media pass to get in, though. You wouldn't have paid.
I didn't pay.
Yeah. You brought it.
Where were we?
Did you wear the lanyard in the Noble?
Yeah. Of course I did, at the bar. Yeah. Just waiting for people to talk to me. Yeah. Well, none of that happened.
Anyway, so...
Oh, yeah.
Curtis Patterson's been rushed into the test side. Let's get back to that. And he's been rushed in. That's the correct verb.
Yeah.
After 157 not out and 102.
It's like when you're late for a plane and someone just pushes past security and gets straight in because they have to board. Yeah. Get on the plane or you're going to miss it. He had to get on the plane or he would have missed it.
That's exactly what it's like. And there's been some, like, it's been welcomed by a lot of people, I think, frankly, because like all of the other criterion for test selection has been like, oh, he's young and could be good, or like he scored some runs in Shield a few months ago. Now we just have a guy who just really recently scored a lot of runs in a match involving an international side. So he's just like skipped the queue a little bit. But now it's kind of, you know, brought on some consternation from a few journos going, well, you know, what message does this send to others around the selection process? Mm. Oh, I just think it sends a really good message. Mm. Like, score runs in team. Mm. Really, like, I'm happy to, like, clap the selectors here who've copped a lot of shit, and rightly so. And Patterson scored runs for a while and he scored a lot of runs now. And it's like, let's just get this guy who's in form to play against the team he scored two back-to-back hundreds against. I'm fine with it.
Makes no sense to me whatsoever. I don't see any logic in that.
Yeah. What did? Yeah.
I mean, because they picked the side.
Yeah. Pez. They've already picked it.
They've already picked it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can't go back on that. I mean, as Australians, you know, corporations and governments hate to go back on their word. If you say something on public record,
yeah, that's right.
You must stick with it.
That's right.
You must fucking live and die by those statements and never change.
Yeah. It's the worst thing you can do in modern public life, change your mind. Backflip. Mm. It's a backflip.
To show growth. Mm. You've grown as a person. Mm. Your views have changed. Maybe you've changed over
Absolutely
the years.
Absolutely not.
Never show that. Never reveal any weakness.
Exactly. I think what the selectors are doing there by picking Patterson ahead of the Ashes series, which is the all-important series, not this series happening right now, is that they just want to know what he's like around the group.
True.
That's the most important thing.
Because this is a question about whether he will play or not. Now, we have it on very good authority that Patterson will play.
Who told
That's
you that?
That's breaking news. Hey, we've got on good authority that Patterson will play. You don't ever reveal your sources. But we thought, you know, if Bukowski misses out, at least we'll be able to see what he's like around the group.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Bringing him to the group, see if he's what he's like around the boys, how people get around him and how he in turn gets around them.
I agree, Pez. I agree with it. Like, there are many things that have happened this summer which you can be angry at the selectors for in terms of selections. But I don't think Jai Richardson, you know, being brought into the test squad or Curtis Patterson as well. Like, a guy scored runs. Like, it's fine. Like, you know, like, it is interesting though. Like, he was out of the group and now he's been brought into it. Like, why bring him into the team if he's not going to play?
Yeah, they need to see him.
So he will play.
He will play. Yeah. I think Bukowski will play too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think...
I think that's exciting.
It's all new and good, but I like the shape of the lineup.
So who misses out then for Patterson?
My six would be Burns, Harris, Khawaja, Patterson Head or flip them, and Bukowski at six. And I think Labuschagne would unfortunately miss out on that side. Mm. So
that is interesting that Labuschagne misses out.
It's going to be disappointing for him because it's his home ground.
Yes.
And we should always indulge cricketers to play test cricket at the home ground.
The decibel level will slightly raise when he comes
and
out.
And his family will come and there'll be a couple of promo pieces to camera with friends and family on both broadcast networks. And I really hope that I can see those. Mm.
Seven and Fox miss out there, don't they? Because that's at least two or three throws to camera to his family and stuff.
That's true.
He'll just be able to get
clapping
there.
Well, also, as he approaches his debut 100, that's what I want to see.
Mm. Also, Shane Warne's record of the Gabba was excellent. So Labuschagne missed out some wickets there, no doubt.
No doubt.
He said tongue in cheek. But isn't it interesting though, he's brought in for one test match, Labuschagne. Now he's going to basically be exited by a guy who scored recent runs, i.e. Curtis Patterson. He probably is a little bit unlucky. I mean, to be brought into the team in the first place was a little bit silly, but like,
come on, boys, it was a little bit silly, wasn't it?
It may not happen. Yeah. Like, it may not be Labuschagne that misses out. He's one guy that you're reluctant to say will miss out because he just always seems to be so close to the side anyway and gets in. So,
well, he was brought into the group because he brings great energy to the group.
And so that's a good role for him in and around. Like, I mean, maybe Australia, they are so fascinated with people who are good around the boys and in and around the group, they should literally just create that role. Just the jester. You know what I mean? Just a fucking 13th man jester. And that ends up becoming...
Like a medieval town, there's a jester.
Well, how many...
Everyone plays a little role.
Yeah. There are so many grade cricket teams that have this character who makes the side for his unlikely sex stories or just his ability to be a great team man to compensate for the lack of skill. Maybe that should just go all the way to the top of Australian cricket. There should literally be like a carved out 13th man who's just a really good team man.
So, but they don't have to actually play.
They're not just really
in the dressing rooms.
They can hold their own.
They can turn it around.
Yeah, they're the best at the the pre-match warm-ups. They're the best at the tea drill. You know, they do the covers. They look worse than everyone else, which in turn makes everyone else feel better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But they're still very happy about it and don't have their ego shook by that at all.
Mm.
I'm shook.
Shook.
the Caxi 11 game against Sri Lanka at Hobart there. Interesting team they picked. It was basically the Australian team in about 5 years' time. Burns, Rancher opening the batting. Was it who batted three? Labuschagne batted three. Patterson four. Bukowski five. Mm. And then Jason Sanger six.
Mm. He'll join us shortly.
He will join us shortly.
It was
one of
those great games where you're just watching it in real time on social, wondering who's hitting runs. It was a real... shootout, a good old-fashioned batting shootout, even though they said, as we mentioned earlier, that it wasn't a match to be determined in terms of selection, it really was.
Mm.
And it was a good old-fashioned shootout, and I love a shootout.
If Curtis Patterson didn't get 100 in the second innings, I mean, he did, so this is kind of redundant, but like, would he have been picked?
I don't know.
Okay. Oh, you seem to be in ground on, you know, in touch with the selectors.
I don't know if he needed one in the second innings as well.
This is maybe off topic, but I noticed that Greg Chappell, there was a media announcement the other day. I got a media alert. He's just picked up a plum role as chairman of Expatland Global Network.
Okay.
I thought he had a full-time selection job, didn't
Expatland Global Network, is that, does that have anything to do with cricket?
No.
Is that a cricket thing?
No,
but
it's
there
just
was
like
a CA
it's
media
just a nice, alert. You know, he's going to sit on a board and get paid a six-figure salary to, for doing something.
But Cricket Australia issued a media alert.
No,
to,
no, no. It was just like a, you know, something you get on your Google alerts. Mm-hmm. I was tipped off on it. But you know, I thought that he had a full-time job as selecting cricketers.
But you could probably do that job whilst watching a Shield game. Yeah, you know, probably a bit of a digital nomad. You know, just takes his laptop to the games, has one eye on the cricket.
Yeah. And, one eye on global markets.
Yeah.
You might be onto something there, Dave. You know, you might have picked up a media alert in your sports business
field. It was a tip-off. I can't reveal
my source.
It's a
tip-off, pardon me.
I just find it interesting. Mm. I mean, I'm all for, you know, flexible workplaces, but we're talking about one of the heads of the national selection.
He should just
panel.
Be doing that job. Especially this
time of
year.
It does seem like a specialised job to me.
Yeah. Mm. Well, should we go on to the BBL just before we get into Jason Sanger, then Adam Zampa?
Let's do WBBL
I meant WBBL. Yeah. Those two semi-finals at Des Moines Oval on the weekend, unbelievable finishes. Pez, you, I presume you watched both of them.
Why?
Why do I presume that?
Yeah, I don't know why for a second I felt like chastened by that suggestion. I didn't watch all of them, but I did. I watched a lot of the first game.
Fucking cricket nuffy, you watched all of them.
Yeah. Sorry, ball. I forget I'm to be ashamed about watching cricket. Somebody who makes money out of cricket.
Mark Waugh's doing
I forget
right.
about that. Yeah, that's right. That's not the way to do it. Yeah, they were great. They were great games. The first one, like I literally... upon the final ball, as that catch was taken on the boundary, I roared involuntarily and frightened my child who was downstairs. Many of you will have heard him before.
The type of roar.
Okay. So my wife's upstairs. Just I don't know what she's doing. My son, who's 8 months old, is on the floor crawling around playing with some toys or whatnot. I gave him a plastic golf club for Christmas and a little ball, and he's swiping at it, which I'm really happy about. That aside, I can't remember the name of the bowler, actually, but comes in. The Thunder batter heaves it to leg. Looks like she's got every fucking piece of it.
Did look good.
And it is taken like it's gone flat, you know, and it's taken on the boundary with the little commando roll afterwards. And I've just gone like,
was stunted because you obviously were aware halfway through the roar that you were roaring.
Yeah, that's right. So it's like a goal at 4 a.m. when you're watching Premier League and everyone's asleep in the house. Down. Anyway, wife runs downstairs wondering what's going on and I show her. And she's like, well, that's more exciting than any other men's cricket that I've seen. And
she's right.
And yeah, that was my experience of it. What was your guys' experience of that catch?
Same, very similar. Just like thought, well, that's a she's just hit a six to win a game of cricket. Yeah. That's literally every batsman's dream.
Yeah.
You know, Michael Bevan's four at the SCG on New Year's Day against the West Indies against Carl Hooper. Sure, great thing. Imagine like slog sweeping.
There's been
a
like 100 last ball finishes since then, but that's always the go-to.
That's always the go-to because it's just exciting.
Yeah.
But then like to hit a six, like to slog sweep a six to win a game, that's your dream. But then it was just plucked out of the air. Also, an amazing grab. Like in a week where Glenn Maxwell dropped an absolute dolly, you know, off Dhoni, you know, just amazing skills. But then, like, it was probably topped because I've got a theory.
There was Nicole Carey who hit that shot,
and right?
Wasn't she blowing up afterwards as well? Did you see it?
Deluxe
the reaction. Oh, blow ups deluxe.
It's part of the reason why batting's so cruel because you just like smoke a ball and someone takes an amazing catch or get a bad decision and then just ruins your weekend. That's ruined her weekend.
But then she'd walk back to the sheds and people were like, oh, bad luck.
Yeah.
That was going
to be sick. Just hit it in
and
front of square.
You feel all right, but you can always take something away. Yeah.
In front of square.
Yeah. Why don't you hit it in front of square?
Well, she can go back and oh, I didn't quite get it.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a big, anyway.
And then the second one.
Yeah, the second one.
I was in Coles at that time and I watched it on a rival network on my phone and the thing I want to point out about this, there's so many things to pick up out of this. Firstly,
that you're in Coles watching
I'm
the
in Coles
WBBL semi-final on your phone.
Support local industry.
Correct. And firstly, like, yeah, so we're talking Renegades versus Sixers. Mm. Elise Perry's delivering the last ball. Like, oh, well, Pez will get us over the line here. You know, as Elisa Healy says, it's just the Elise Perry show.
Mm.
And gets creamed behind square.
Yeah.
And the diving save, for starters, is unbelievable and hasn't had enough credit.
Yeah,
I agree. The air time to even get there.
Yeah.
Her mate is supporting her. No one picks that up as well. Like, it's actually come to converge in on the ball.
It's professional.
Turn and throw. Unbelievable throw. At this point in time, the camera pans back to Elisa Healy to, like, the pitch. And Elise Perry's, she's, like, already, disconsolate. She's gone. You know what I mean? And she hasn't been sledged for that. She should be, rightly so.
Yep, we're doing
Elisa Healy fucking turns no sight of the stumps. And just to watch the ball arc toward the stumps.
Yeah.
And the best bit about it for me, which is, like, the great sign of a really good sporting moment, is as the ball hits the stumps, such is the, like, sudden roar of the ground, the camera shakes. Do you know that camera shake
when it's like a goal effect? In Uruguay at 4 a.m.
Exactly. The camera shakes, and like Elise Perry still, like, as the ball hits the stumps, I don't think she realizes that they're still in the game. And you could tell that because when she, like, you know, as she always does, ends up like winning the game or icing the game herself, she's still fucking furious at herself. Like, you can tell watching her, she's like, I can't believe I nearly lost that fucking game. Oh, it was fantastic. Couldn't believe it. I didn't let off the same roar in Coles, but that was just a social graces thing.
Just in front of the perishables.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought that was like probably the best moment of cricket we've seen this summer. Like the collective skills of that. Just incredible.
What
just
a sequence.
To have three to win the last ball, just slicing one backward a point. The dive to save it, incredible. The professionalism to actually have two people around the ball, that would never happen.
That throw by Healy, unsighted, just turned it around, just pinging.
I like it how, like, the commentators...
Sorry, you said pinging. I started thinking about...
Sorry, I just said pill testing.
The commentators seem to celebrate Elise Perry being at the stumps when Elisa Healy... Like, even, like, she's so good that just, like, you're celebrating her standing next to the stumps.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's great awareness to be next to the stumps.
No, she was just...
That's just where she finished.
Yeah. Yeah.
She thought she'd lost the game.
And then she got into a super over and she just hit a six and then it was game over. So she is the hero. All right, well, that's the highlight of the cricketing summer. It's not going to get any better than that, so we should just stop now.
BBL or...
Well, what is there to talk about the BBL? Yeah. I mean,
trudges
the
on, isn't it?
Trudges on.
I just want to say one thing about the BBL because I've kind of like defended the fact that you're not meant to give a shit about what's going on with it. One thing I will say, like, one problem that the BBL's got this season, I don't know if it's specific to this season, but it's like, and I know this like because I'm writing some match reports for Crick Info, like, I've done about 10 of them, and I feel like I've been able to write the report about who's won about three overs into the second innings. Like, it's actually starved of close games, the BBL, for whatever reason. Like, I don't know why, but if you seem to win the first innings in these BBL matches, you tend to go on and win the match. Like, there's very few comebacks or, like, very few people are reversing whatever trend is happening in the match. Once a team gets behind, no one's overcoming it. There's a few exceptions, like the Hurricanes did it against the Scorchers.
Yeah, that was
recently.
A good game. That's been one of the only good games
I think that's one of the reasons why people are struggling with it as well, because like, no one's waking up in the morning going, gee, what a great close nail-biting finish. There's no nail-biters. Why?
Well, I mean, the game that I went to, the Sixers were like 4 for 20. Yeah. In the first inning, so it's like, okay, well, this game is already over.
Yeah. I switched off immediately.
It's 20 past seven.
Yeah.
It's 10 minutes into this game and it's over.
And this was a thing that – this was a criticism of T20 cricket when it first came in to the consciousness. Like, people were – one of the criticisms was like, well, once someone gets ahead, no one really comes back. But, like, the skills around the world have developed, like with your Donnies and whatnot, to be able to, like, edge your team back into the match through just some, you know – clinical play, a bit of busy running or whatnot, or some defensive bowling.
T20
but
cricket.
Not in Australia. In Australia at the moment, like this season especially, it just seems like teams are lacking the kind of nous to get themselves back into a match.
That's interesting, Pez, because I was thinking like, so George Bailey's done really well and he basically anchored that chase where he got 69 or 70.
The Hurricanes are the best team by a long way.
And George Bailey helped the Hurricanes chase down the Scorchers like 180 or something like that.
Right.
And I was just like, he won't get picked. You know, if he was batting five in the Australian side, he won't get picked because we like all of our batsmen to be able to hit like 120 meter bombs. Mm. Sure, they hit two of them and then get out.
Yeah.
But that'll be good bombs, I tell you what.
And we like our batsmen to bat with their shoulders facing the umpire.
Yeah. Anything weird.
Anything weird.
Another thing is that the Brisbane Heat are the biggest myth in Australian sport.
In Australian sport?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've got the Bash Brothers.
Mm.
I'll do it once for you.
The big Bash Boys.
Yeah. Say that. I agree, but then I was looking at the stats, and Chrislean's actually got over 300 runs in this big Bash, so he's up there.
But there's been like 68 games.
He's 1 in 5.
I know. Yeah, I think
the way he's mythologized, it bothers me. Come on the show, Chris, please. Yeah. But he's it's, I just feel like it's a bit lazy. I can't remember it. It's just like, oh, how good's Linny? You know, it's like, oh.
When he hits it, mate.
Yeah, when he hits it, stays hit, doesn't it? Yeah,
okay. That is true. It does stay hit. It does stay hit after he hits him. I agree. I think he is one of the most overhyped batsmen that I can recall. But saying that, he has actually collected a large amount of runs, so I don't know. I don't know what to make of that. But, yeah, he's a bit 1 in 5, you're right.
Yeah. 1 in 5.
All right, Adam Zampa coming up. But before then, Jason Sanger.
Ever looked for a new club online? Have things ever gotten so grim that you'd consider moving interstate or even overseas? Just to continue your fledgling amateur career in a slightly higher grade? Bravago compares prospective clubs from various competitions. Grade cricket, shire stuff, even Yuck Park cricket, where the home ground has a tree on the field. Over 10,000 different clubs across the world, ranked according to criteria such as professionalism, pitches, and tee spreads. Instead of searching for hours, Bravago makes it easy for you to find the perfect club in minutes. Just go to our website, type in where you want to go, when you want to go, and press search. It's that simple. We don't care why you want to go, how old you are, what you averaged last season, or whatever else you're running away from. We just want to help you get there. Best of all, Bravago even allows you to search based on how shit the blokes are. Filter according to Spirit of Cricket rankings in order to find the club with the least amount of self-respect and therefore the best cultural fit. With just a couple of extra clicks, you can get a real insider's look at your potential new club. Will a good-looking 30 get you instantly promoted up a grade? Was their club song penned by alcoholics? Is their major sponsor an Asian massage parlour? How many used syringes are typically found in the grandstand on a Saturday morning? Has the club president previously been indicted for tax evasion? And so much more. And that's how you can be sure you find your ideal club in time for the new season. New club, Bravago.
Boys, we love a prodigy, which is probably an unfair thing to hang on this guy, but you know, that's what we're here to do. He's an Australian under-19s captain, New South Wales cricketing starlet. You know, many are saying he's the saviour of Australian cricket. He's the saviour that we're yearning for, which is, again, unfair to say to him while he's on the other line. So we thought we'd bring him onto the show. Jason Sanger, welcome to The Great Cricketer.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, more than welcome. Thanks for coming on. Mate, look, we always want to start asking about grade cricket, and it's a tough one with you because you just have been in all the underage sides. You're the captain of everything. Everyone says you're the next big thing. I mean, do you even play grade cricket? Do you even bother with it?
It is.
No, look, I love my grade cricket. Yeah, it all started with me up in Newcastle for Wards End District Cricket Club, and yeah, gee, that was so much fun. I think all the guys got around me when I was a young kid. Like, I was a 12, 13-year-old kid trying to crack into grade cricket. And, yeah, I think about a lot of the guys made jokes with me as well. But, man, they were awesome. They were some of the most caring guys. And, you know, it's like having a little 13-year-old running around grade training to be sometimes pretty annoying. So, yeah, I think they sort of took me under their wing really well. So that was awesome from them. So I absolutely love them a lot. And then, yeah, obviously with the Ramwick Creation Cricket Club in Sydney now, and yeah, the club's done so much for me, so I've been so thankful that I've been, you know, with two really good great clubs.
Just to quickly go back to the Newcastle debut, Jason, at the age of 13, you mentioned that the lads were able to get around you. Can you kind of elaborate on what it's like to have a group of men kind of get around a young 13-year-old?
Oh, I'll tell you what, it was, yeah, I'll tell you what, I think I still am, but I was one of the strangest kids growing up, especially when I was like 12 or 13. So I was so annoying. I think I was the typical 12, 13-year-old. I actually remember my first ever first grade debut. I just turned 13. And, yeah, I rocked because, like, 13-year-olds, like 12, you know, you play cricket and you rock up to junior cricket and you're white. That's certainly how it works. So, yeah, I remember getting mum dropped me off at the ground, you know, getting my kit bag. I was in my full white, and I just dragged my kid straight. And luckily, the opposition didn't see me, but I went straight into the change room, and I was just like, oh, morning, guys. And everyone just sent me and just went, oh, my God. So that was, yeah, that was one of my earliest memories of grade cricket. So I'll tell you what, that was... From that day, I'm surprised I didn't get. I'm surprised the guys were tolerated me. So, yeah, can't thank them enough. But yeah, rock up to your wife in your first game of first grade. That's
$2,000.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. Mm. Well, you're probably already better than them, so that probably got away with it. But I want to ask you, Jason, about obviously you're 19, so you're still eligible for PGs, which is the under 21 competition in Sydney. How much PGs are you actually playing? Are you going from like the Caxi to the under 21 stuff, or how much PGs are you playing at the moment?
Yeah, look, I try and play as much as I can.
Which
I
is
think
never.
I play one game a year. I try. Like, the guys at Randwick are awesome, and they're such a funny bunch of lads to play with. So, I mean, I'm always trying to play PGs when I can. But, yeah, I've only played the one game this year, which has been a bit unfortunate. But, oh, it's cool fun. Like, it's literally, like, I don't know. It's such a... The guys get... yeah, we just have so much fun when we're playing, and there's you know, obviously love playing up, love having fines at the end of those games as well. And yeah, they're just such a fun to play PGs. But yeah, great group of guys. So when I am available, yeah, I try and play as much as I can.
Jason, I just want to continue this theme of you being a young prodigy playing with men. You strike me as a very well-mannered young man. Like, can you remember, aside from turning up in whites, like, can you remember perhaps the most, like, chastening thing that happened to you as a youngster playing with men? Like, did you see things in the dressing room that you don't want to remember but you could tell the rest of us about? Like, I mean, what was the strangest or most, like, what was the biggest learning experience in the dressing sheds playing with men?
Oh, well, I learned very quickly that you don't rock up in your white. As soon as my captain's just like, here's my training shirt, and he just wore something else. And I went, all right, sweet. So, yeah, I actually walked up past my white. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, a 13-year-old kid, you don't really get exposed to, you know, the men changing room.
He's like, quite young, yeah. Yeah. 13, he's quite young.
So he's quite young, first grade.
Yeah. Going, 100%. From going from junior cricket, where it's like, you rock up, you know, and your mum, I used to sit down with my mum before I got to bat in junior cricket. And this is like, I'm with like 11 other men who are like half naked in the dressing room.
Only half? Wow.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, the other half were being polite, so I didn't get a fucking it was pretty funny. Like, the guys at Wall's End were awesome. Like, they were, as I said, being a little 13-year-old kid just running around, like, hasn't hit puberty yet, and just, like, the most annoying voice. They told me pretty well. But, yeah, I think in terms of the learning experiences, I think the best thing they more than ever did for me was put me at first grade at such a young age, because I suddenly learned straight away what great cricket is and what men's cricket is as well. And I think it developed that sort of that early mental toughness that I had to go out and play against men, and almost like conquer that fear of, you know, being a 13-year-old kid, like I was exposed to short ball pretty early. So, I think I learned from playing with little 142 two-piece balls to four-piece balls with blokes using their two short balls and over. So it was, a massive jump, but at the same time, like, I'm very thankful that I actually got an opportunity, so I could, you know, when I got a little bit older in my career, I sort of had like that sort of mental toughness and that first bit of really good bowling under my belt already.
Mm. That's good that you say you were introduced to the short ball early. I actually went to a private school. I only played grade cricket when I left school, so I actually didn't face a short ball until I was 19. It's really confronting.
It's a pointless ruling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, mm. yeah.
And that's probably why he didn't go on.
Probably. Like, yeah. That's the one reason.
Jason, you know, there seems to be so many spots up for grabs in the Australian side, and particularly with Smith and Warner suspended, you know, everyone is looking around the country for the next big thing, and, you know, there's nothing Australia likes better than a young wunderkind, you know, on which to pin our hopes and dreams. And many people in that context have been talking about you. I mean, Kerry O'Keefe described you as the best since Ponting. Is that kind of praise helpful, or is it a hindrance?
I've said it before, There's a lot of worse things that could be said. I mean, having my last name sang, I've heard plenty of bad ones, don't worry. But,
right.
There is some worse things that could be said. But I think it's praise. And I think early in my career, when I was about 16, 17, I'd just sort of gone on the scene into age group cricket, and underage carnivals. I think I probably put too much pressure on myself to. I've got, you know, a rookie at 16 years old. I got my first rookie, so I think straight away I put myself under a lot of pressure, and I was almost just adding myself and putting added pressure into myself about, you know, going out and, you know, trying 100 every game I play, and you know, trying and being like this type of person now, because, you know, I'm a contracted player, I've got to be a bit more responsible, I've got to be doing. I just put so much just random other stuff into my head because I had a rookie contract, and I think it took me about 2 years to actually get over that, like all the sort of hype and the praise, because I think I just used it as just added pressure. So, but I think nowadays I'm actually, you know, I've learned the hard way about, you know, taking the good with the bad, and also just, I think it's nice when people are saying good things, but at the end of the day, I think actions always speak louder than words. So for me, it's about, you know, going out and making sure I firstly do the job for the team, but I also, you know, I'm scoring runs for the team or trying to take wickets if I do bowl my dusty leg spin. But I think it's the most important thing for me now is to worry about, yes, it's nice people are saying a lot of good things about me, but if I'm not putting runs on the board and I'm not backing it up, then, you know, there's no point those conversations being being held. So for me, it's just making sure that if I go out there, I'll do my best for the team, score as many runs as I can, and I think the rest will take care of itself. If I worry just about, you know, trying to please other people, or, you know, buying into so much what people are trying to say about me, which I did early in my career, then yeah, I can go down that path again of you know, really putting a lot of pressure on myself and almost, you know, not enjoying the game.
At the moment, you're playing obviously for the Thunder. You're playing with guys like, you know, Joe Root, Joss Butler, Shane Watson, etc. I mean, what's that like? And is there a guy in there at the moment that you sort of go to for advice? Are you talking to Joe Root, or, you know, is he good for? He must see you as well. That's someone that he might, you know, come up against in the National Series one day down the line, or do you sort of go to more like a Shane Watson, who's obviously played so much international cricket? Like, what's that like playing with those guys?
Oh, it's been awesome. I think I was so lucky that I was, you know, being to be able to share the same dressing room as Joss Butler and Joe Root. That was awesome. I think, you know, those two guys have so much experience, and someone like Joe, who I looked up to for a long period of time, you know, to be able to share the dressing room with him was awesome. And yeah, I absolutely just keep praying. You know, asking so many questions about batting and just cricket in general, and, you know, sort of how to deal with all the sort of external stuff as well. And he was awesome and helped me. So yeah, I was always going to him for advice early. But I think the best thing about the Thunder group we have, we're a really tight group, so I've always asked questions to a lot of other guys as well. Chris Green's been really good, sort of talking about bowling, and from a bowling perspective, for me to be a batsman, and obviously, yeah, Watto and Callum Ferguson, and all these guys that have played, you know, domestic and international cricket for a long period of time, they've all, you know, given me bits of gold that I can, you know, I can't thank them enough for.
Mate, do you ever get, I mean, given a great start to the Shield season, you've obviously registered a ton, you know, and people in Australian cricket love nothing more than a ton from a young player. Do you ever receive any kind of messages from the selectors or people closer to the side saying, sort of, keep going, we're watching you, you know, that there might be higher honours around if you keep going?
I think everyone sort of gets messages from, you know, high people saying congratulations, but I'm not sure, yeah, in terms of, I don't think you really know how close you are until you actually get there. So for me, I think, I've never really received in terms of how close I am to playing at the highest level. But for me, right now, my focus has just been playing for the Thunder and then trying to win the Shield season for the Blues. And if I worry about those two things, then I'm obviously going to try and worry about scoring runs for my team. And, you know, scoring runs for the team is obviously going to take my name to high honours eventually one day. So, but yeah, as I said, like, the most important thing I can do right now is worry about playing for whichever team I'm in and trying to do the best I can in that environment. And if I can keep doing that, I can keep putting my runs on the board, then I think the rest will just take care of itself. So
Well, Jason, that's not as fun as if you just said, yeah, Greg Chappell texts me all the time. But you're obviously smarter than that, even if you did. So let's move on to the throwdowns component and see if we can get something out of you there. So these are all silly questions, and I apologise in advance. This is I've got a long question here, Jason, so just bear with me. But I'm keen on your answer. So as you would know, but possibly not the listeners, there's a little-known YouTube clip where you appear in a one-on-one conversation with actor, model and Ms. India. Your Australia Goodwill Ambassador 2018, Cerrone Roy. It's literally called Off Screen with Cerrone Roy. Response. But for listener background, she is host, and she asks you a series of get-to-know-you questions like what's your preferred superpower, your favourite three songs, and if you're a woman, who would you want to be? And you said Jennifer Aniston. This goes on for about 10 minutes, but to my mind it gradually becomes more and more flirtatious to the point where you're directly asked about your relationship status, your coy, and to name three items of clothing you don't wear to bed. And then you suggested you don't wear shorts to bed before clarifying that you wear undies. But Cerrone was happy to say, no, shorts is fine. I'm just a leery 33-year-old. I just want to know, did Cerrone end up playing any shots at you after that?
Oh, that is the funniest thing I've ever been asked. Oh, man. I tell you what, that was, that was pretty strange. I won't lie. I try to do my best to not say anything that was too stupid, but I think you guys found a good bit of gold there, so no comment, really.
That's all right. I think you handled yourself well. I mean, the YouTube clip is up there. It's off screen with Cerrone Roy, which is a funny name because it's on screen. But, I just feel like she just gradually tried to seduce you on screen. So if you've got future captaincy kind of ambitions, that might be something you want to look at. I actually think you handled yourself quite well in it, so...
Yep.
Anyway, that'll get a few more views now.
I'll tell you what, that's exactly what I wasn't after, that getting a few more views after what I...
Apologies.
After that exact thing, because, that is a complete, shameful act for me. So,
no, you were good.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting answers on that.
Jason, you obviously play at Randwick Petersham, where Mike Whitney is the club president. He's obviously a former Test cricketer, of course, and Who Dares Wins host among his many accomplishments. What's he like as a president? Is he a larger-than-life character, or is he kind of a frugal gatekeeper to the new pills at grade training? What's he kind of like?
Oh, Whitney's a legend. Yeah, he's so funny. He's one of the most passionate... when people say he was extremely passionate when he played, I could definitely say that because he brings it back to when he's club president. He's been awesome. Early in the season, he was at a few great trainings, but he's obviously so busy these days. But, he tries to come to our home games at Coogee and as much as he can. But, he's been awesome. I love Whit. He's one of the funniest guys I've ever met. And, he's got some absolute cracking stories about when he was playing Test cricket for Australia. So, Whit's an absolute legend.
We should try and get him on the podcast, so if you can have a word to him, that'd be great.
Excellent.
he's good value, Whit, 100%.
As Dave was saying there, Jason, you play your cricket at Coogee Oval, one of the most gorgeous, picturesque and verdant grounds in club cricket globally, where sea meets sand, British backpackers burn their fragile European skin upon the foreshore, house music is played with apartments overlooking the ground, and a serviceable but excellent circuit life within walking distance from the ground, not excluding, of course, the infamous Coogee Pavilion. Realestate.com.au states that the median house price in Coogee is $2.68 million, with previous residents at varying times, including Colin Minogue, Kate Blanchett, Jason Donovan and Mel Gibson. How shit is Spotless Stadium?
Oh, man. Yeah, compared to Coogee, I don't know, eh? the best thing about Coogee Oval is all the quicks want to go down to Flying Leg, where it's nice and safe.
Good optics.
Why do I choose Legspin? I've got no idea. The pros and cons of being a spinner and a pace ball at the same time. it was awesome, great. It's a 50-minute drive for me to drive out west. I live around about near Coogee, so going out to Spotless is pretty good. I'll tell you what, Coogee Oval, one of the greatest places on earth. You pretty much nailed everything in the head then. Great. Awesome beaches. Pavilion is a nice place for some of the boys to go. So, I love it.
It's always good being able to pay $30 for parking just to go to play a game of cricket as well. Yeah, it's always nice icing on the cake.
And they get fined $50 for dropping a catch and saying something weird and stuff. Yeah.
That's me most weeks in Greg cricket. $80 done.
Jason, as I said earlier, you're a well-mannered, well-presented young man with youthful exuberance, a wonderful smile with great teeth, and according to Kerry O'Keefe, the best since Ponting, with the world at your feet. Not even Ponting was this nice at such a young age. I struggle to believe that an Australian cricket prodigy doesn't have skeletons, but that aside, what have you learned from playing club cricket with David Warner?
Oh, man, these are great questions. David's actually been really good. He's been awesome at great training and playing as well. And I think he's exactly what sort of our team needed, someone with a load of experience to come in and actually sort of help the guys and pass on information. So, yeah, he's been really good. He's been awesome. If I don't want to fix him up too bad here, but he every now and then comes to great training with a brand new Jupiter and follows his team up. So that's been pretty tough work as well. So, I'll tell you what, it's pretty funny, but he's getting them through all right, and he's the games I played this year, he was putting his hand up for a bowl, and actually got a wicket bowl in his team ups as well against for the start of the year, Fiacre Wilburton, but he ended up getting a wicket as well, so it was actually bowled, I think it was through the gate, so he's worked on his team ups pretty well, so it's been good.
There's a joke somewhere there about David Warner bringing in his own balls to succeed at training. I'm not sure what it is, but I'm just going to leave it. I'm not sure what the joke is. Yeah. It's sitting up
there. It's there. Well, someone can write into us. Exactly. Jason, just last one from us before we wrap it up here. But I just want to know, is it obvious that we've got you on the show because we think you're going to play 130 tests for Australia and we want to be best friends with you from the beginning? Also, can I have some gloves?
I tell you what, GM, my very great sponsors, GM, sent me some black gloves, and I wore them against the Strikers game and didn't pick a wrong one from a normal leggy from Rashid, so I'll give you that. there may or may not be a bit of superstition there, but you're more welcome to have them.
Yes,
very free nice. Free kid.
Very, very good, Jason. Thanks for dealing with that. I think you're probably the second youngest guy to ever come on our show and listen to leery 33-year-olds discuss the vagaries and the bad elements of grade cricket, and you're just a pure, thoroughbred, excellent player. So thank you for just coming on and dealing with that. Wishing you the best for the rest of the season.
Oh, thanks for having me. That was awesome. I love the Greg. I'm even in the book at the moment, actually. So keep up the good work.
Yes,
it's making me laugh so good, so much. So love it. Thanks for having me.
This in the Fairfax papers over the weekend, boys, discussing the phenomenon of, we know the phenomenon where you know people who are better looking or bigger or more presidential get better jobs, right?
Yes.
There's a term for this now.
Rightfully so. Yep.
And rightfully so, there's a term for this now. It's erotic capital.
Yep.
A lot of cricketers have erotic capital. A lot of cricketers don't.
Big time.
We all want erotic capital, and I would suggest that there are ways beyond simply having a good rig or being big, tall,
right,
from a man's point of view, to get erotic capital. One of those ways I would suggest is to indulge in some budgie smuggler.
Yeah,
I'm
kit.
A cuck.
You can get it in kit. You can get it in kit. Yeah,
yeah,
for sure. I mean, like you're looking at you guys like your Stoinis.
Yeah.
You know, Sean Marshall rebranded himself with erotic capital.
Yes,
he went from just looking good to having erotic capital.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you don't have those things, you don't have like the salad, the rig, the chest, the pipes, et cetera, et cetera.
So erotic capital is, it's not just how you look. It's more than that, isn't it?
Well, it's the way you carry yourself.
It's the way you carry yourself.
Like, yeah.
It's people want to be with you.
Yeah, it's pheromones. It's Harvey Specter. It's the way you engage yourself with other people, the way you hold yourself in crowds.
Mm.
People like to stand out from the crowds, and those kind of people are budgie smuggler people.
And I think the message from this piece was for managers to forego or to recognise their own bias towards those with erotic capital. That's not our message here. Our message is embrace erotic capital, but understand that you get it from budgie smuggler. That's one example. This is an Australian company. Everything's made and produced in Australia.
Right.
So you're supporting local business as the global storm clouds hover over our entire economy.
Yes. Sexy local business.
Exactly.
Pez, Budgie Smuggler got in touch with us and they have said that we have single-handedly saved their company.
Correct.
by promoting their brand on the podcast. And I'd like to see what the people out there have done with Budgie Smuggler, like our listeners, like how they've engaged in some custom wear maybe. Yeah,
custom smugglers.
You know, some retro kit. You know, that's obviously big in cricketing spheres right now. Mm. I want to see some engagement from the audience out there.
Using. You want some photos.
That's what I want.
You want them DM'd to us.
Yeah.
Off the public chain. And we might post them if we like them and talk about them.
Maybe that's true. I reckon that
for an additional fee from Budgie Smuggler.
I reckon our female audience are probably using budgies as well. I mean, our female audience.
Smuglets.
Smuglets, exactly. I reckon they're the kind of alpha queens out there who are using budgies as well. I mean, they're obviously like blokes as well.
Yeah. So to the alpha queens, to those wanting erotic capital, look at Budgie Smuggler, custom swimwear, any design put on it with a, using the discount code CHAMP.
Yes.
If you jump onto budgiesmuggler.com.au, you can have free shipping or some such. budgiesmuggler.com.au for erotic capital or alpha queens. Boys, this fella's enjoying a great career. He's represented Australia 54 times, according to Crick Info. Just passed 100 first-class wickets. Mm-hmm. He's got a best of 6 for 19 in the IPL. Despite not playing in New South Wales for nearly a decade, the state will still claim him at any opportunity. He's a regularly requested guest. It's Adam Zampa. Zamps, if I can call you that. Welcome to The Great Cricketer.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. You are a regularly requested guest. I think it's because people view you on TV, Zamps, and again, I hope I can call you that, and I think they suspect they see, like, I wouldn't say like a rare unit, but like a spinner in the sense that, you know, yeah, like you have a few quirks and stuff like that. Would it be fair to characterise you that way?
I think most people would describe me as a little bit outside the box, I'm not surprised to get that I get requested, to be fair. I haven't really given much to a lot of. I think it's my first ever podcast, so this could be interesting. Actually, I don't really know what the public's going to think about me after this. I don't really talk that much.
This could be interesting.
This could be this could be anything. That's exciting. Well, let's start slowly. We'll start slowly, slow and steady. Like we always start the same way. It is the Great Cricketer after all. You're a product of the Sutherland Cricket Club, as I understand it, in Sydney, in this very Sydney-centric show. Can you tell us about like what grade cricket means to you? Do you even still play?
To be honest with you, I hate grade cricket.
Keep going.
I hate it so much. And I actually, my loyalties still do lie with, even though I haven't been there for about 6 years now, I check the Sutherland score more than I check my Adelaide fan score.
You didn't even say the name of the club.
Sometimes if people ask me what club I play for, I just say I don't have one.
I don't think we ever get like any of these interviews clipped up for sound bites, but I think that one will make it. I hate cricket. I hate it so much.
I hope no one in Adelaide listens to this, and particularly my grade club. But I've been trying to delay which club I sign for every year until I know which weekend I'm available, and then I'll just choose whoever has the bye.
Mate, don't apologise here. I mean, it's really refreshing to hear someone talk earnestly, you know, someone who's played at the top about their experiences at grade level, because it is a very, very dark place sometimes. I mean, I'm sure you haven't experienced the darkness, but you must have seen some blokes running around that just should not be wasting their Saturdays on this.
I've seen the dark side of grade cricket, that's for sure, yeah. And the excuse that I make up about trying to not play is that, you know, you get the guys that work 9 to 5 that probably fielded last week, and then I come in and they have to go back to second grade and field again. I try and come across as sympathetic, although I'm not.
we're genuinely.
Do they kind of look at you with, you know, trembling eyes, you know, hoping for some kind of validation? You just stare coldly past them, like looking over their shoulder, or what's your kind of attitude?
The coldest stare ever. I reckon I'm the hardest person in the world to read, particularly on a Saturday afternoon at Campbelltown Oval in in Adelaide. I think that's where I play grade cricket. I can't remember.
Campbelltown in Adelaide. Yeah. I mean, can we? We were going to ask you like genuine questions about international cricket, but I think we'll stick with this. That's unanimous. Like you talk about. Like, what are the dark sides of grade cricket for a professional player? Like, especially one now who, like, you kid around the IPL and, you know, World T20s and World Cups and stuff. Like, can you speak on behalf of the professional playing fraternity? What is it like to play grade cricket?
Do you want my honest opinion?
Yes.
Preferably.
I grew up playing country cricket, so then when I stepped up to Sydney grade cricket, I really enjoyed it. And as I said to you earlier, like my loyalties, yeah, I still check up Sutherland Cricket Club for some reason. So I really enjoyed Sydney grade cricket. But now, you know, I've been playing a lot more cricket since I left New South Wales. I've been playing for Australia and a little bit more and whatever, so I haven't really had the time. But actually, don't mind it. The darkest day you could say, was me in grade cricket. It was the last time I played. I actually got 1 for 100. And this was 2 days after I was complaining about not getting picked in chill cricket, so it wasn't a great look.
Did you come up playing through all the grades, Adam, or have you just sort of like just bypass all of the shit down the bottom, you know, fives to twos, and just go straight into first grade? Like, have you played every grade? Like, what's your lower grade experience been?
No, I played country cricket with Warilla Cricket Club up until I was about 16, mm-hmm. and then about the same time I started playing Australian 19s, I went straight to East Cricket Club. I actually had a year at East Creek Club when I was 17.
Right.
And then just for opportunities. I mean, you know, I was still living at home back in down in Warilla, so I moved to Sutherland just for a bit of opportunity and also it was closer to home.
Right.
I didn't even think about it. I guess I was pretty lucky that I just skipped all that other stuff and went straight to first grade. I probably should have started grade, to be honest with you, but I went straight to first grade. Mm.
That's worrying. That you, I mean, you haven't even seen the real darkness of grade cricket then. Like, at least yours is just first grade. Nevertheless, we appreciate your candour on that, Adam. I think we're going to move straight into the throwdowns because I think that's where we're going to get the most value here. So we're just going to ask you questions that are probably silly, and apologies in advance. The first one I've got is actually wildly long, so apologies really to everybody, but I will get there. So, Adam, I was taken by a quote of yours where you say, "I love animals, so I'm a vegan now, so I don't have any animal products in my diet. I rescue animals too. Any chance I get, I like to spend time with them. I'm very interested in farm animals. Firstly, I admire that, so congratulations. And second, as you'd be aware, recent research by 20 influential food scientists published in the Lancet Medical Journal suggests that the global food system is unsustainable and driving the planet towards environmental destruction while simultaneously leaving billions of people either underfed or overweight. It calls for a radical reduction in the consumption of meat and dairy in favour of plant-based alternatives. The healthy, sustainable reference diet would involve a complete restructuring of the average person's diet. Beef and lamb consumption reduced by 90% to just 7 grams a day, roughly half a meatball. On top of it being probably the most ethical thing anyone can do in terms of their relationship to food and impact on the planet, as well as being able to copy both you and Peter Siddle. My question is, what advice would you give predominantly male cricketers looking to reconsider their meat consumption in the face of fears they'll be labelled a weak, plant-based cuck?
I don't know how it goes down in grade cricket, to be honest with you, on a Saturday. Some of the teas and lunches you're given, you might struggle, but from a personal point of view, it's just the toughest thing that I found was just having, I was always angry about it, and I was probably wouldn't argue my point as well as I probably could have, but now I'm probably a little bit more relaxed. You know, I've been vegan for 3 years and I have more information about it than I ever had before. So at the end of the day, I did it for the animals and then eventually did it for my own health too. So the more information you have, the more questions that people have or anything like that, you can answer them probably a little bit better than I'm like used to. At the end of the day, like, I actually feel like you're more of a man for stepping up and doing what's right for the animals and doing what's right for the environment as well. So something that I'm proud of, and it's something easy, I find really easy to talk about now. I don't try to push it down anyone's throat, but just going to have the information pretty much.
Hear, hear.
Yeah.
Very.
I hope that wasn't too long.
No. I think I was long.
It was nice and earnest.
I'm cutting down, yeah, genuinely.
We'll cut it out because it was a very earnest response. Adam, I've got another one here for you. So you've played 54 white ball matches for your country, taking 64 wickets, while also representing New South Wales and South Australia at both Shield and domestic one day level. In this time, you've built a reputation as the country's premier short form wrist spinner and the go-to leggy for various T20 franchises globally. Can you please tell me how you managed to superimpose Kane Richardson's face onto a dog in your recent Instagram story?
which most recent month?
It was one with Kane Richardson, and you managed to put his face onto a dog in an Instagram story.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I put so much crap on there. You should see my last one. Put up about 10 minutes ago. I don't know where it came from, but it's come straight out of my ass.
Do you have any kind of burner social media accounts so you can just, you know, say what you really want to think? I mean, you've got obviously the ones with the blue tick, but you ever thought about creating a burner account and just saying what you really think?
No, I've just been trying so hard to get rid of the blue tick for so long now.
Tough,
I don't want it. That's why everyone thinks I'm such a rare unit. I actually sometimes don't even know what I'm posting on social media.
Just black out.
So amazing, yeah.
If I don't understand it, then how's everyone else meant to?
That's a good point. Adam, legendary Australian captain Steve Waugh often spoke about the pride in playing for the shirt and how the legacy of the Baggy Green made his players go through brick walls. Such was the weight of responsibility of representing not only the country, but its principles. Do you feel that same weight of history when you're playing for the Jamaican Taliwas, Guyana Amazon Warriors, or rising Pune Super Giants?
Look, like, people say that playing CPL is about the check, but like once I got to Guyana and saw how bad it was and how disgusting it was as a place, that check became more and more important to me. So the quicker I could get it, the quicker I could get out of there.
How good's cricket?
Oh, it's so good.
It's a great game.
You say it's not about the cheque, but that's actually because they pay you in cash over there.
Yeah. I had to buy some shoes just to fit some notes in there.
Avoid tax on the way out of the airport.
It's good.
Adam, you once cited Shane Warne's Hasselhoff theory, named after the Baywatch actor, as an early influence on your career. Now, according to the theory, if you're not bowling well or you're a little down on confidence out in the field, the solution is merely to stick your chest out. Now, just digging a little deeper into the theorem, did Warne have any specifics on how far you need to stick your chest out, or for how long? Is this theory transferable outside of cricket, i.e. can I try this at work during an important PowerPoint presentation? Or is this something that requires additional bench press sessions? Can you just run me through the Hasselhoff theory as run down by Shane Warne?
He mentioned at the time, he said the weather's important, so it's cold,
right,
and you're a little bit turned on, then you don't really have to stick your chest out so far because your nipples are already very extended. But if it's warmer and a little bit hard to see, then he said it's really important to stick it out as far as you can. But I don't know, it's obviously a summer sport, so he said the further you can stick it out, the better. But in the cold English county cricket, he said he wasn't too fussed about it because he felt like his chest was already at the batsman's end anyway.
They call him one of the greatest cricket minds,
yeah.
Shane Warne, and that's a testament.
I thought I already had that information in my head when he was telling me that anyway, but it was nice hearing it from him too.
I mean, on that same note, Zamps, Stuart McGill was a wine connoisseur.
Let's talk about McGill.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about the brotherhood generally. Like, so McGill was a wine connoisseur. You know, when we all we drank was VB and 4X. Greg Matthews bowled with a hat on and once scooped up dog poo with a glass at drinks in a grade match. Mm-hmm. Warnie's Warnie, obviously, and you've been known to circuit with nothing but pants, shoes, clear-rimmed glasses and a blazer buttoned over a bare chest. Mm. Like, as a spinner myself, I just want to ask, like, why are spinners such rare blokes? Why are they this way?
Mm. I guess it's just the mental disintegration over time of bowling one over and getting smacked and then getting taken off and then maybe not playing the next game. Mm. Maybe the next game you test a few different theories, like putting red wine in your drink bottle instead of water. I can't really put my finger on it, but it's pretty tough being the lonely rare unit in every team. So you've got to try and figure out a way to get through the day. I've heard some pretty good stories about McGillar, so.
Well, I was going to follow up with that. Like you just mentioned McGillar earlier. You obviously characterised Warnie as someone who made theories based on whether their nipples were hard or not. Mm-hmm. I mean, how would you characterise McGillar in that sense? Like, what was his brand of rare unitism?
I've had a little bit to do with him, and I don't know what end of the spectrum. I don't know how far the spectrum goes. I don't know.
Or where he's on it, yeah.
Is he on the extreme end of the Spinners Brotherhood rare unit spectrum? Like, if you're trying to plot kind of Matthews, Zampa, Warne, McGill, who's it there?
I think you've got Zampa, probably mid-range, and then you got McGillar. So there's probably a few. There's, like, Michael Beer in between that.
Right, okay.
And then you've got McGillar towards the end of the spectrum, the extreme end, and then probably Greg Matthews.
Mm. Off the charts.
Mm. Oh, he's off the charts, yeah.
Adam, okay. During this Australian Open right now, we've seen Vogue editor and style icon Anna Wintour sitting with a Federer camp, a nod to the Swiss most maestro's style both on and off the court. Given you were pictured wearing blackout Vans with the retro ODI kit a week or so ago, which fashionista would you invite to your private box at the MCG for a Stars game? Tony Hawk, Kevin Federline, or Corey Worthington?
Federline.
probably more my era would be Corey Worthington.
He gets a Guernsey.
Sunny, just the sunglasses and the hair and the just his confidence in front of the camera too.
Yeah.
Something I really admire and respect.
Yeah.
Amen.
Amen.
Adam, undoubtedly the wildest conversation we've had on the show, and we appreciate it greatly. We're about to go and have a beer and no doubt toast to the conversation. We've greatly, greatly enjoyed it. This is being recorded. This is recording, yeah.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Just let us know afterwards if you want anything pulled from it or anything. But
or if you want a job reference. I can give you a job reference.
Our editor guy just had a baby. He hasn't got heaps of time. So, yeah. But, mate, what a great chat. We genuinely wish you all the best for the rest of the season. Mm. And I'm sure you've garnered a great number of fans following this chat. Not the ski.
Thanks very much. I appreciate that. And I'll be doing as much as I can to get to the extreme end of that spectrum too. So, if I have anything else, I'll just voicemail it to you and you can chop it in.
Lovely.
Will do. You can see Adam Zampa playing for the Stars, Australia, the World Cup, IPL, and all of those white ball games where there's heaps of money.
Yeah. All good bookstores.
Brisbane, we're going to be in you on Wednesday evening performing live at the PES.
Queensland Multicultural Centre,
at
Ian.
The Queensland Multicultural Centre, where all great live comedy acts perform when you go to Brisbane. That's where you got to go. Some say the powerhouse, where you say no, no, no.
Three white blokes at the Multicultural Centre in Brisbane.
Celebrating monoculture.
We have...
Satirising the Australian cricket monoculture.
Lads, the show's almost sold out.
Yep.
Which is awesome. And then Canberra the following Friday. Tickets are available. You know where to get them. Easiest place. I don't know if you're looking on your phone right now. Instagram. Go to our bio. The ticket link is there. Go to Facebook. There's a ticket link there. Twitter, ticket link there. You know how the internet works. We really want you to come. By the way, Trent Copeland's obviously coming. Mm-hmm. But he's a colleague at Channel 7. So we thought, well, we need to get a local guest to really get people over the line if you want to come to the Queensland Multicultural Centre. So who do we get? Who do we get, guys?
Someone who's been around, knows a bit, is a colourful identity, has achieved a fair bit in the game.
Yes.
Good mates with Warnie.
Yes. Mm.
John Buchanan.
We got the greatest Australian cricket coach of all time, John Buchanan.
And because he was coached during our formative years, it's fair to call him Australia's cricket coach.
Yeah, he's just Australia's cricket coach. Yeah.
It's like Alan Border as captain. He's just the grandfather of, you know, like the goddaddy
yeah, so
of Australian cricket.
We got John Goddaddy Buchanan to come to our live show with Trent Copeland as well already coming. So if that doesn't get you over the line, well, you're not going to come. Yeah, you're just not going
to
come.
Yeah. I'd say also, I'm really looking forward to going to Brisbane. It's going to be hot. It's going to be a little bit wild.
You're going to wear R.M. Williams?
R.M. Williams.
Going to go to Fridays.
Definitely going to go to Caxton Street, going to go to Normanby. We want a circuit afterwards.
I want to go to the Story Bridge.
Take us to the place where people circuit in Brisbane. Come to the show and then take us to the circuit places.
Take us to the circuit.
Our VIPs, they've already paid their $60, but if you don't want to meet us after the show, then just pay $40.
Take 40 and fuck off. It's fine. We'll take 40.
I'm really looking forward to a few beers afterwards.
Anyway, that's good.
So I'm looking forward to Brisbane.
Okay, so that's happening on Wednesday night, the night before the first test match. If you listen to it before, then come along. Just come along, get around us, get around. You know, we'll be good for the group. Mm-hmm. You know, you wouldn't be good for our group.
And we, in turn, will get around you.
Up, okay. About around.
That's what's going to happen in Brisbane. Then following week, we're in Canberra, performing at ANU in Canberra Friday, next Friday. So, but we'll plug that next week as well anyway. All right, okay, ask TGC. A couple of long ones here, lads, but let's whip through them because, you know, there's some big issues, but let's deep dive these. Okay, Joey Wilson comes in, he's writing in from England. He says, "G'day fellas. I'm a 20-year-old has-been and I have an awful relationship with my dad watching my cricket matches. From 15 to 18, I banned him from watching my matches after he came after me in the changing rooms asking me why I got out stumped to a fat balding fuck on a shit wicket." This is just how it starts, lads. This one's quite dark. "I invited him to come down and watch me play in my final junior age group match this summer, thinking I could cash in being at the maximum age able to play and wanting to smash it past the 14-year-old fielders who are little brothers of older guys wearing black trainers and whites to finally win his approval. I chopped on third ball for the game for two and then was subject to my dad dragging me around the ground for a lap, walking past every supporter calling me shit shot to everyone that would listen to him. The next league home game, after he turned up and watched me try and cart a young leggy with a shit action into the next village, resulting in my poles getting rearranged Aaron Finch style. Walking back onto the balcony of the shed, he sat waiting for me, asking me what the fuck did I do that for? And in such a rage of fucking up another opportunity to finally get his approval, I blurted out, 'Because I don't fucking care,' in front of my team. Luckily, being one of the only two willing to stand in the slips, I was saved from being labelled a rare unit. We also had an under-19s v over-40s game this summer and I managed to give it away whilst he was bowling at me, chipping the catch to the only fielder inside the ring on the leg side, lovingly known as Symbols. But please help me out with what my problem is. Is it that my dad has the biggest alpha complex ever heard of, even though he's never played past third team and I've been in the first the past 3 years? Or that I'm the one with the problem because it's taken me 6 months to gain the courage to talk about my 50-year-old dad beating me in front of my team and every parent at my last junior game? Why change a habit of the last 8 years, hey dad? Regards, Joey Wilson from England." Mm. Wow, there's a lot going on there with Joey and his dad.
Mm. Mm. You're both looking at me.
Wow.
So Joey's dad's a fuckwit.
Yeah.
I think we can safely say that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we've come across Joey's dad before. I mean, not exclusively his dad, like not personally. Mm. I don't know who he is, but yeah. Like,
I think like we obviously joke around about this stuff quite a lot, but like one of the great things about having like parents that might suck, or if you see other parents that suck in particular parts of their life, like it can be a great lesson for what not to be when you become one as well. Mm. You know, there's a silver lining to that. So hopefully, Joey, you can experience it and go, well, my generation will be a little bit better than yours.
Yeah, I think so. And maybe it is an opportunity to sit down with his dad and ask, what about your relationship with your dad? Because these actions and characteristics are inherited. It's generational, handed down.
Mm. I want to know with Joey, like, what's he playing for? That's what it always comes down to. Is he playing to earn the affection of his dad? Because if so, he needs to stop playing cricket.
But also he banned his dad from watching his matches from the age of 15 to 18. His dad was blacklisted from coming to any of his matches after he came to him in the changing rooms asking him why he got out stumped to a fat balding fuck on a shit wicket. But he obviously lifted that ban, you know, thinking that, you know, maybe he could repair that relationship. Well, but his dad just let him down instantly. So maybe just emancipation, leave your father, don't ever talk to him again. I don't know what your options are.
Is this like a binary thing, either leave cricket or leave your dad, one of the two?
Depends like whether this like beatering, which is I like that verb. I don't know if we've said that before, like to beat somebody. Like whether that extends beyond cricket or if it's a cricket-specific thing. Mm. Hopefully it doesn't extend beyond cricket. It's about a relationship that his dad has to cricket that's a little bit, like, messed up or something. But, like, compassion is really the key. I think what you said, Dave, is really important. Like, you know, maybe just try and understand what your dad has been through or whatnot.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I feel like cricket's probably an unhealthy place to be for you, Joey.
Maybe he's seen some things. It's like, you know, when you've got your granddad and you find out he's, you know, served in World War One or Two and saw some absolute atrocities. You don't know the story until you know.
Mm. Therefore, like, yeah, and also, like, pay it forward a little bit. So, like, now that you see what it's like to be beaten by, you know, someone who's probably insecure, like, just be a good bloke to other people and encourage them.
That seems like a sensible answer.
I think that was in the Bible, though.
All right. This one's... I'm just going to wrap up the show here with this second one.
Okay.
It's a longer one. And it's from Matt Edstein, and he actually emailed this to us. This first bit, he says, "Hi guys, late last year I tried to slide into both your Facebook and Instagram DMs with my hashtag AskTGC question, but it seems you haven't even opened my messages. This is despite your Facebook Messenger saying typically replies in 1 to 2 days. I'm starting to feel like Stan in the eponymous Eminem song. All I am after here is to know that you have read my question. You can even just reply to this email with a tick. The suspense is giving me anxiety. Cheers, Matt." All right. So then I went to the thing and I found Matt's question. He said, "At a recent pissing contest over beers..." Can you see why I didn't read it? "At a recent pissing contest over beers with my colleagues in London, moved here over a year ago, but I spent most of my life in Sydney, the conversation turned to our greatest individual sporting achievements. This one is usually an easy one for me. Playing for my school in under-11s, I took 5 for 6 off 3 overs in the last game of the season. This included a hat-trick in my first over. I was asked to recount each ball of the hat-trick. It was my pleasure to do so. I tended to come on as first change and fancy myself as a Funky Miller-esque medium pacer come-off spinner, which was the style at the time. Side note, I didn't know why my coach ever let me bowl the offies. They were fucking yuck. On this sunny Sydney day, I opted for the mediums. First ball was your standard under-11s dismissal. Pitched on the stumps on a half-decent length and the batsman played all around it, smashed into the stumps. Second ball was exactly the same and the boys were getting around me. Hat-trick ball to come. The third ball cannoned into the batsman's The third ball cannoned into the batsman's foot right in front of the stumps, a la Mitchell Johnson giving Stuart Broad a fucking broken foot in Perth 2013. The whole team went up and the umpire raised the finger. Absolute scenes. After finishing my story, I looked around the group, obviously expecting everyone to be impressed, but one bloke just stared at me with disdain. He said, 'You mean to tell us that your hat-trick in the under-11s was completed on an LBW decision? I didn't even think they gave LBWs in the under-11s. I started to panic. This guy didn't even know that the umpire was actually also my coach and my year 5 teacher at school. I began to question everything, not least of all the mounted cricket ball trophy that still sits proudly on my desk of my old bedroom. Was my hat-trick not a real hat-trick? Was I merely the beneficiary of a coach/teacher who was sympathetic of how much the team had been trounced all season? We were shit. Is my whole life a lie? Please help me, TGC. P.S. Worth noting that this is the only match my dad missed all season. He was usually the team scorer but couldn't make it that day. I was always sad that he missed what I thought was my finest moment, but now, depending on what you guys think of the legitimacy of my hat-trick, I can't help but be grateful that he wasn't there to witness this shameful moment. Hashtag ask TGC. Excellent question, Matt. Sorry it took us a while to get to it.
And we do actually see every message that we get, by the way.
Yeah.
There's a mechanism in Facebook where you can actually...
Well, don't tell on that.
Okay, sorry.
Let's deal with that element of the question first. Yeah. Well, like, my first thought is that, like, any achievement in cricket normally comes with, like, some kind of disclaimer. And history is written by the winners. It's about the way you deal with those disclaimers. Like, I mean, Dave, for example, you mention your childhood successes every week on the show. They're still childhood successes. You know, you could clearly point out a few different issues with a lot of it. The fact that you're playing in, you know, a geographically, like, rich area, that a lot of those kids, you know, didn't even go on to play men's cricket and stuff like that. But it doesn't matter. Like, you know, those hundreds are hundreds. This guy's got a hat-trick. Doesn't matter if it's under-11s or how he got the decision. It's a fucking hat-trick, you know, simple as that. It's about the way he wants to spin that narrative. I'm a bit disappointed that, like, upon one question, his whole fucking life's unraveled. You know what I mean? You say you got, what, you just, like, you know, some man who's just wants to reflexively question success.
Yeah.
Has said, what, you got it from a, you got it on an LBW and under 11s. And he's fucking like questioning his whole life now.
How whether that's true is your sense of identity.
Yeah, exactly.
That you've clung to for however old you are.
Because if you need like if you need blokes to just if you need blokes to like accept all of your achievements without any questions, like
purity.
You're not going to survive in this world. Do you know what I mean? I've just done it to Dave. You know, like he's done some really good things as a kid, and I'm still questioning it on air. Like that's just what we do. Like. I mean, don't worry about it. You got a hat trick, mate.
Just happy that you brought up my hundreds again.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's right. Like, it's like slogans, stop the boat, say it enough. You know what I mean?
Pez, great dissection of that question. I just like it's just like toxic masculinity just wrapped up. I mean, like one guy hasn't even like hard pressed him. He's just like kind of like raised eyebrows, like LBW was it last time?
Yeah,
and he's like, and this guy just like fallen.
I started to panic.
Yeah, he's like fallen into like.
His, and now he's thinking about this umpire was actually my coach and my year five teacher. Yeah. So conflict of interest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it was a lie. Maybe your life is a lie.
But under 11s have LBWs, don't they?
I think it says more about the bloke who asked the question.
Yeah.
It's like, what fucking under-11s were you playing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they. Yeah, I remember getting out LBW and getting LBWs in under-11s.
I remember getting out, giving out LBW from my year six teacher.
Yeah.
From a guy bowling right arm medium pace around the wicket.
Yeah.
And I was giving out LBW on the front foot. Yeah.
Which gave me flashbacks. I remember LBW.
Rod, what's his name?
What was his name? Mr. Who?
I can't remember. I can't remember his name. That's going to annoy me now. Yeah. I can't remember his name.
He's been convicted of something. Not allowed to say his name on
here. He hasn't been. So it's shameful that I have to say that just to caveat it. Okay. Well, that's you've answered it. You've answered it, Pez. All right. Thank you so much to Adam Zampa. Thank you so much to Jason Sanger. The Brisbane Show, Wednesday night. Get around us. If you're from Brisbane, if you're in Brisbane, don't bother coming to it if you're not going to be there. But, you know. All right, we'll see you next week.
To be honest with you, I hate grade cricket.